We have an emergency preparedness panel, and they have been patiently waiting. It is going to be chaired by Jeff Tom. We have Georgiana Armstrong and Vance Taylor. And he's from right here in Sacramento, of course. And we have Jackie Cosi, or Tamayo. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And my Braille display is a little bit slow, but she's from San Jose. And then Jennifer Maradiaga. And she's also coming to speak to us, and I'll let them introduce themselves and not delay anymore. Take it away, Jeff.
Okay, thank you. So as Regina just stated, we have, and I won't go through everything here, but we have Georgiana Armstrong, who is the Kern County Emergency Services Manager from Bakersfield. By the way, we have a fantastic chapter down there in Bakersfield. Vance Taylor, who is Chief of Office of Access and Functional Needs in the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services. We have Jackie Cosi Tamayo, who is the Emergency Planning Coordinator for Santa Clara County Office of Emergency Management. And finally, we have Jennifer Maradiaga, and I probably butchered your name as well, Emergency Planning Coordinator for the County of Santa Clara in their Emergency Management Office. So we're going to cover two major questions today, and I hope to leave some time for questions from the audience, because this is just such an important topic. The first question, and I'm going to throw it to one really a national expert in this field, and I say that very advisedly. He is known throughout the country, and he has spoken to us before, Vance Taylor. So the first question, and then others can chime in. Vance, as a transit dependent person, or really anybody for that matter, but especially in the guise of most of us, what do you feel that a person needs to take with them when they evacuate as a result of an emergency situation?
Yeah, no, great question, Jeff, and thanks for inviting me to be on the panel. It's great to speak at the group again. In looking at the question, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is the times when I go to an emergency shelter and I'm speaking with individuals with access or functional considerations, right? Older adults, people with disabilities. What is it that they are in need of? And usually it comes down to the things that they don't think about in the moment of evacuation. It's this really, really high stress environment of, Jeff, you got to evacuate right now. The wildfire's coming. The flood waters are on their way. You got to move. It's life safety. Go, go, go. And in that moment, it's not realistic to expect that you're going to remember all the things you need. I think about when I go on a trip, I always have to make a list, right? Otherwise, I find myself on an airplane and I'm asking my wife, but what did I forget, right? I know I forgot something. And leaving for the airport's not nearly as stressful as evacuating for my life. So we talk about things like have a go bag. And yeah, you know, your go bag needs to have all sort of the standard things that they talk about, right? Some clothes, some water, some flashlight, a radio, cell phone charger, that sort of thing. When we're talking about individuals with a variety of disabilities, we have extra considerations that we've got to account for. So, for example, medically relevant phone numbers, right? As well as our prescription medicines. I've been in a shelter and I've heard somebody say, well, I don't know what pill I take. I take a red one and an orange one. And it's like, okay, well, remember the names or the dosage. Well, one's sort of an oval shape and the other's a triangle. Okay, well, you know, let's call your doctor. Well, I've got that phone number, but I forgot my phone. Or my daughter has that. She handles that for me. And, of course, that phone number is not memorized. And so those are the type of challenges of we can actually get you the prescription medicine you need, but we need to be able to speak with your medical providers. So bring medically relevant phone numbers. Bring identification cards. Bring a copy of your health insurance. Outline any allergies, those type of things that you might have. But really, medicine, medicine, medicine. Also, if you use assistive devices or technologies, you know, a lot of people communicate using an iPad or their screen readers or other devices, bring chargers for those. I can't tell you how many times people have the resource they need in hand, but they don't have a power cord to charge it so they can utilize it. Also, the number one thing that we find that people who use power chairs forget to bring are wheelchair chargers. So it's this idea that you got to think about, well, what do I need in order to be safe and secure and independent? And make that list and have that list somewhere when, if the time comes, when you've got to evacuate in a hurry, you're not going to forget the things that are most important for your well-being. Steph, I know you have a lot of other things you want to get to, but those are just my thoughts on that topic.
Okay, any other of the panelists wish to chime in on this particular question? Okay, so thank you for that answer. And the next question, we're going to turn it over first to our county folks, and then after they've all had a chance to talk about it, then we'll get back to Vance and let him weigh in. So I don't consider myself anywhere close to an expert in this field, wish I did, but I'm not. But one of the things that I have come to learn is that, in my opinion anyway, perhaps the weakest link in many of our county and local jurisdictional plans is the ability to ensure that people with access and functional needs, which include us, and most of us are not only fall into that category, but most of us are also transit dependent as well. People like us at this virtual convention here are able to be evacuated to a shelter. I personally don't know for sure how I would get evacuated. I might have a way with, you know, one of my daughters, but I'm not sure that they have kids and they have other, you know, parts of their support system that they have to deal with. So I don't even know for sure how my wife and I would get evacuated. And I've given a lot of thought to it. So if I'm in that position, then many of you are in that position as well. So my question to my panelists in Santa Clara and Kern County, and I'll let any of you start with this, is how can a county best provide in their plan for a system that will ensure that those of us who are truly transit dependent will be able to be evacuated? And And I was so passionate about that question that I knocked my headphones out as soon as I said those words. So whichever one of you wants to start, go right ahead and address that very difficult question.
So I'll go ahead and begin. Thank you once again for the invitation. I am Jackie Cochi Tamayo, and yes, you pronounced it correctly, so thank you. And I am the program manager for the Access and Functional Needs Cultural Competency Division of our county. And it is a question that keeps coming up time to time on how do we properly evacuate if we have an access and functional need, and how does the county promote it and plan for it in the time for response. And it is a complex question, and it takes a large village. So here in Santa Clara County, we use a three-prong approach in preparing for evacuations. And it's a great question because right now we are rewriting our wildfire annex that includes evacuation and integration of access, those with access functional needs for their not only evacuation, but also when we do reentry and repopulation. And first and foremost, we do a preparedness phase and trying to teach and educate all members of our community about personal preparedness. So something that Vance was mentioning, what do I need? How do I see things? What do I have in my around my house? So when we have to go, we have that available. But on top of that is, who do I talk to? How do I go? What do I have? What transportation needs do I have available to myself? And sparking those conversations. So we talk a lot about that and working with our nonprofit organizations and our team members, both at our regional centers and independent living centers, and really start working that community of preparedness. But when we are talking about the response and how do we do it, we have an amazing access and functional needs cultural competency sub-working group, because we truly believe that we cannot plan for evacuations or anything in emergency management without you. So we really want our community to be a part of it. So we do, when we are starting the planning, we bring in groups of people that includes our fire department, our sheriff's department, and our community members with subject matter expertise to see what are the gaps that we need to know about when it comes to evacuation. What are our routes? What's the topography of our county? So in our county, we have the valley, very flat land, but we also have mountains and windy roads, areas that have one egress and one ingress. So we try to actively make sure that we take those considerations when it comes into evacuation processes. And we work with transportation. Transportation is very key. So who is not only in our typical transportation authorities, but our paratransit or any private vendors who can assist with those capabilities. And one of our key groups that we have formed over the years because of all these conversations is a strong medical health group. And in that medical health group, we make sure our access and functional needs coordinator is involved in those conversations, because we're not only thinking of anything that's limiting in the sense of physical disabilities, but we're thinking about proficiency in other languages, cognitive, everything under the scope of access and functional needs. So when it comes to evacuations and knowing our demographics of the area and working with our partners, we could better prepare of resources in the area. And we lead that into recovery. So we use the same thing of when it's time for us to come back from an evacuation of a certain area. How do we also provide assistance on those who may not have transportation capabilities and or need assistance, how they get to come back home or come back to the area that they evacuated from. So these are the conversations that we do have, and we don't do it just in-house. We use our partners to make sure we have those thought-provoking questions, making sure that we try to provide solutions. And we use a lot of guidance, and Vance could tell you, we probably call him a lot too. So sorry, Vance, but we use a lot of our guidelines and guidance from Cal OES and CDC and other agencies, because we just want to make sure that when we are speaking about evacuations, because things are quickly, and sometimes things change, but we have a strong foundation so we can make those decisions with our partners at that crucial time when it's time to say go.
Okay, thank you. So, Georgiana, I'm going to ask you to answer that question. Georgiana comes from a county with which has some different challenges, got some, you know, extremely, you know, well-populated, densely populated urban areas with the city of Bakersfield, but it's also got a lot of rural areas as well. So, Georgiana, I'm going to turn it over to you and see what you have to say about Kern County specifically and the whole issue in general.
Thank you, Jeff. And I had a problem with my link, so you see my name is Vance Taylor. Happy to follow in his wake, as always, but I'm Georgiana. And even though I work for the government, I really want to start this out by saying your best bet is to build something redundant so you are not totally reliant on the government. As Jackie mentioned, when we are in a situation where we have a fire or something going on where we're evacuating, there's a lot of moving parts. So one of the preparedness things that Kern County preaches for everybody, but especially persons with access and functional needs, is to build a support team. And that is not a buddy system. As Jeff mentioned, he's talking about how would he evacuate, and speaking about his daughter, recognizing that she has other commitments. So whether it's in your workplace or your home with your neighbors, if you could develop a cadre of people with whom you feel comfortable enough to be able to express what your needs are and explain that clearly, that is going to be helpful, so you always have a first choice with government being your second choice, because government is going to be so busy. Ensuring specific response at an individual level is very hard to guarantee. You can have systems in place and you're going forth as widely as possible, but when it's your life and your safety, having that extra layer of saying, I've got multiple pathways of people that could help me, I think is to everybody's benefit. The other thing I wanted to mention specifically for this group is before you can evacuate an area, you need to evacuate from your home. And in California, obviously, we are prone to earthquakes. And so if there are persons who are blind or who have low vision, after an earthquake, you could have debris and pathways that you wouldn't expect to have there. So I would suggest, just a suggestion, and it's not specific to evacuation, but to also, in your preparedness phase, really take some time to make sure that your home is as earthquake-proof as possible, so that if you have to leave your home, you're not going to encounter barriers that you didn't expect to be there. I'd also want to recommend that in California, there are three levels of evacuation. There's shelter in place, there's evacuation warning, and there's evacuation order. Now, an evacuation warning is going to be issued at a time where it is suggested that people who will need additional time to evacuate, this is the time for them to leave. When you receive an evacuation order, that means leave right now. Danger is imminent, go now. So the time to prepare and to contact your group and to reach out for resources and to get moving is when you get that an evacuation warning. So in Kern County, what we do is I would strongly suggest that everybody reach to their local jurisdiction to make sure that you are registered to receive alerts and warnings from your local jurisdiction. In Kern County, we have a system which we call Ready Kern, which we've used for a long time. And I just have to throw in, because I'm extremely proud of, we were able to enhance the ability of our Ready Kern system, partnering with a company called Deaflink. So now when you get Ready Kern messages, there will be links to a video with our message in American Sign Language, captioned and spoken, and another link for the message in audio spoken by a certified Spanish speaker. So I just have to say that because I promote DeafLink wherever I go. I think it's something that every jurisdiction needs, and I'm thrilled that Kern has it. When we are in an evacuation mode and we activate our Ready Kern system, within our message, we will include information that says, if you need evacuation transportation assistance, call this phone number. And that phone number is to our Aging and Adult Services Department. It's their elder abuse hotline, so it is manned 24/7, 365. We don't want people to call 911 because those numbers are going to be overrun, and we want them to call a number that's going to be picked up after a couple of rings and you're actually speaking to a person. So staff at Aging and Adult will take intake from the caller, their name, their address, any of the particulars that we need to know. Aging and Adult Services will then forward that information to emergency management up at the Emergency Operations Center, where we will, first, we will also contact the constituent just to confirm you're ready to go, you want to go, we've got the right address. And once we have that confirmation, then we would deploy transportation resources. In Kern County, we work primarily with Kern Regional Transit. We also have memorandums of understanding with our local bus service known as GET, and also with the superintendent of schools, because the superintendent of schools has the largest accessible fleet in the county. For most of our events, we are able to get by with our Kern Regional Transit, but it's good to have backup to know that we have more resources if we need them. Another thing I'd like to mention to you, and especially in Kern County, if we are dealing with fire, once you have an evacuation order, that is a lawful order for law enforcement to close a road, and entering into an area under evacuation can be problematic and tricky, and we are not going to send drivers into an area where they could be endangered by flame. So I would very much recommend again that if you receive an evacuation warning, that is the time to take action. You have time to coordinate with your group, and we know that we can get the drivers to you to help pick you up without endangering those drivers themselves. Now, on our transportation services, you can bring your companion animals. They ask that the cats be in a kennel, the dogs be on a leash. Obviously, service animals are always welcome. We have drilled very much into the county system that the service animal remains with their owner and has the same legal rights as their owner, and they are not to be separated under any circumstances. We have pushed very hard for staff at the shelters and throughout our process to know the only legal questions that can be asked to determine if it is a service animal. And I would also recommend that anyone who uses a service animal very clearly understand their rights. So if there are any problems with perhaps less experienced shelter staff questioning that, you know where you stand. And if you get any pushback, you immediately ask to speak to a supervisor who most likely would understand the situation better. Wanted to mention a couple of things about sheltering. We've done a lot of work in Kern County to make sure that our shelters address access and functional needs. And we've added additional protocols and equipment into our shelter trailers. We maintain additional lighting for those with low vision who may need night lighting. We've directed that shelter staff provide a verbal orientation to any to the shelter layout, to any rules, regulations, whatever it is that would be written and posted will be in large font. But if that is not sufficient, that shelter staff will provide verbal orientation. We know that in a shelter, oftentimes things are moved around as the situation grows. So we've also given very specific directions that the cot placement for people who have low vision or who are blind always be placed next to a permanent fixture, a pillar, a wall, with clear access to restrooms and to the eating facilities. I have to say, I also admire Vance. I get a lot of guidance from him. But as an emergency manager, I really appreciate the advocacy of what this council is doing. Sometimes when I'm speaking, I need to make sure that people understand I do not consider myself a subject matter expert. I rely on the subject matter experts, on the Vance Taylors, on the independent living centers, on the councils. Your advocacy to make sure that your needs are recognized and known by your local emergency managers is critical to the success of their ability to build the plans that will meet the barriers that you may encounter. Because most emergency managers are not living your life. They may not be aware of the things that can happen that can complicate things for you, and they can't begin to address them unless they are made aware of them. So your advocacy to your emergency management to be very clear and very direct, this is what I need, these are my gaps, how are you going to address them, gives them the baseline for moving forward to try and find solutions. So in Kern County, we do have a system set up. As most of our evacuations have been in our smaller areas, in our mountains, where mostly due to wildfires, we've been able to pull this off very successfully.
Okay, thank you. So, Jennifer or Vance, did either one of you want to add anything on this question before we turn to my final question for the day?
Hey, Jeff, it's Vance. So just a few things. And apologies, I didn't turn my camera on earlier. But it's on now. There we go. I think Georgiana and Jackie hit the nail on the head. I will say just maybe a few things. One is to continue to emphasize the importance of an AFN advisory committee, right? But that's the opportunity that emergency management has to really partner with the whole community. It's in that arena that people are able to understand each other's needs, right? That people are able to advocate for their needs, and where we can move away from having our plan for the community as written by emergency managers in a vacuum, to having our plan of the community as written by the community. It's a huge difference, right? Planning for people instead of planning with people. Specifically on the evacuation side, jurisdictions need to stretch. One of the things they need to do is really make sure that there's a standardized operating procedure in place, because so many communities have this notion that, hey, we've got a plan in place for people to secure, let's say, accessible transportation services. But if the end user doesn't know how to access those plans or resources, then it really doesn't serve them. And oftentimes, we find jurisdictions do this thing where, hey, for this wildfire, call this phone number if you need help. But then there's a flood, and they say, if you need help, call this number, and it's a different number. Or it's a different wildfire, and so now we've got a new number. And so as a community, we're not really sure what number do we dial, so we end up calling 911. Which, as Georgiana said, is not what we want people to do. So if communities would commit to having a single number that can be utilized, they'll do really well. Kern County is, I think, a great example of that. It's consistent. It's socialized through the community. And so people know exactly what to do and where to go to access support. We also want to see jurisdictions have more signed agreements with accessible transportation providers, not just in the jurisdiction, but in surrounding jurisdictions. And those really need to ensure that service can be provided 24/7, that they're going to provide taxi-like service, right? So on demand. And that they're going to be at no cost to the evacuees. The reality is, government needs to stretch. But I will also emphasize that as individuals, we need to stretch too. Right? I was in a meeting recently and I asked, how many people are signed up to receive emergency alert warning and notification messages? And not a lot of hands went up. I asked, how many of you have a system in place where you've got maybe four or five people that you can call to support you during a disaster? Right? Recognizing that maybe not every one of them will be available, but that hopefully at least one of the four or five will be available. And not a lot of hands went up. And so as we start to ask these questions, it becomes really clear that we each have a different capability or capacity to prepare. But I think each of us can probably do more than what we're doing. And so as government stretches, as individuals stretch, and as community-based organizations and councils such as this one, really work to promote a culture of preparedness, we find that we start to move the needle in significant ways. And that's where you end up really decreasing the level of human suffering that we see during events. That's, I think, how we reduce the number of lives lost during these events. And that's how we as a whole community come together, right? By trying to support individuals on a one-by-one basis. So thanks for the insights that have been provided, and thanks, Jeff, to you and the council for what you're doing. This is the type of partnership we need.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to ask one final question, and then I want to turn it over for questions from the audience. And these answers can be brief, you know, but every one of you has emphasized advocacy by the disability community. Some places have access and functional needs advisory committees, and many others don't. To any of you, what are your thoughts on some of the better ways that we can have our voices heard and advocate, especially at the local level?
This is Georgiana from Kern.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's a two-way street, because I think when, after Hurricane Katrina and the issue of access and functional needs started to become more relevant in emergency management circles, I think one of the big obstacles, at least in the early years, is that emergency managers didn't know how to develop this new group of stakeholders. Our usual stakeholders were fire and law and public works and public health, but this required us to reach out to the community to find the stakeholders who could give us the information we needed. I'm very lucky in Kern County to work with the Independent Living Center, who I could not function without. So we don't have an official council, but we work with the Independent Living Center and the Regional Center, and Be Glad. I didn't know the Council on the Blind had a chapter here in Bakersfield, and now that I know, I'm going to be reaching out next week to make some introductions, because I want to make sure we are coordinating with them as well. So I think that if there are organizations that could also reach out to their local emergency managers and say, I'd like to meet with you. I have concerns. I want to understand your plans for this. I want you to understand my perspective on X, Y, and Z. I think emergency managers would be very open and welcome to those contacts, because if they're not doing work on AFN, it's because they don't know where to go to get the subject matter expertise to bring policies and procedures to life.
Hey, anyone else?
This is Jackie Tamayo with County of Santa Clara. I would mm-hmm. also piggyback with what Georgiana said. We do have a very strong committee here in Santa Clara County that involves a lot of our larger organizations and even our smaller county community-based organizations. But we don't know everyone, because there's always new groups. And I think the problem with emergency management and access and functional needs and the policies is that emergency management has a history of thinking secondary of access and functional needs. And we have, since, as Georgiana said, since Katrina, it's became part of the forefront. So we have been educating our emergency managers within our county. So us as the county, we work with our cities to educate them on the essence of access and functional needs to be a forefront. And that comes a lot with working with our community-based organizations, our and our private NGOs. So we asked for those who would like to reach us, go and they're part of an organization, contact us. And if we're not there, we work directly with our ADA coordinators within the county. There's a disability council advisory group that we work closely with our office of, our county executive office, and reach out to us there. Because for emergency managers, we need to be present as much as we can in the community to make sure we're available and open to hear and to work with our community members. But also, don't feel that it's impossible to talk to us. Come and talk to us. We're here to do it because, as mentioned earlier, we can't prepare and plan, respond, or recover without you. We can't plan for you without you. You're part of this, and we're a more resilient community with all of us together. So please shoot us the email and be a part of our group.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Jeff, this is Vance. I just want to say, so we've got this Office of Access and Functional Needs within the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. But that didn't just happen because the governor woke up one day and thought, hey, there's a need for this, and here's how we'll move forward. This office exists because the community came together and advocated for it. And so that's the power that the community has. And we see that big change at the state level, but we also see it locally. And I think it's really important to note that in reaching out to emergency management agencies and partnering with them, it becomes really clear on the emergency management side that these community-based organizations bring a lot to the table, that they increase the bandwidth that an emergency management team has to identify and address considerations for the whole community. And so, you know, you can ask local emergency managers, say, would you like help assessing your shelters? Would you like support securing durable medical equipment or assistive devices? Are you interested in folks that can do a cut-by-cut assessment to identify and address needs? And it's like, yes, yes, yes. And would you like that for free? Yes. So that's when they really start to say, like, oh my gosh, not only is this a better way to serve our communities, right? That's more effective, but it also means we have bandwidth to then go do other things as well. And so we start to see CBOs as a force multiplier. If this group or any other group wants to get involved and they're having trouble connecting, I'm going to call my office. I'm happy to connect them with local emergency management agencies. We've got really good people that want to do really good things. And to the extent that we can help facilitate or empower that, that's a big part of why we exist.
Hey, thank you, Vance. So I'm going to turn it over to next. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is Georgiana. Could I just add one more thing?
Sure.
When we first started planning access and functional need response in Kern County, it was, it was after Hurricane Katrina, and we had this big issue with a local dam, and we were doing evacuation planning. And way back when, I remember that several of my command staff, I work for the fire department, they didn't understand why I was making such a fuss about this. They felt like, well, we've got this. We've got this. And I finally turned to one of them and I said, well, what do you all have in common sitting in the command staff at the fire department? You can all see, you can all hear, you can all walk, you can all swallow. You cannot understand. The world is not like you. And so I think if you are seeing that, and with that, and that I think was one of the early stumbling points, is that the people who were planning response, primarily the first responder community, didn't have the lived experience to say, oh, this is an issue, because it was never an issue for them or anyone they were surrounded by. And once we got into this and the issues started coming forward and they started to see the gaps and understand that, you know, the all-powerful sheriff and fire by themselves could not address this, I think it opened up the door more for being very receptive to getting that exactly that kind of input that Vance was talking about. So I'm hoping we've made a lot more progress statewide, and I know that Vance has been working on this, but I cannot overemphasize that emergency managers cannot do this without the input and involvement of the community. You have the lived experience that we may not have, and we cannot identify the barriers that come with your lived experience without your input and your guidance.
Okay, sorry, I had to stop a phone from ringing. One of the problems with Zoom, right? So I'm going to turn it over now to our fantastic host, Natalie, to see if we have any hands raised, and we'll take one from Natalie, and then if we have an email one, we'll take that one from Steve. So.
All right. Hi there, Natalie. Excuse me. You do have one hand, and you have Robert Acosta, and you are unmuted. You can go ahead.
Okay.
Or at least he said he's unmuted. I'm sure. Yeah. You can speak, Robert. We are not hearing you. You have just muted yourself. You are unmuted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yep.
Thank you. I live in Los Angeles County, but I'm quickly moving to Kern County. I don't know. I know you're mentioning emergency management. I've pinned in on that. Where do I call to register? And I may have missed it. Do I call the fire department? Say, I'm a blind guy here. Help me out. And they'll say, well, we can walk and see and all that. But firemen are the best, by the way. They've come to our home often, not for fires. But so where do we start? Do I go to my city councilman and say, where is the emergency manager? I'd like to meet him or meet. I think it's wonderful. One more point. I'll be quick. I think it's wonderful that in Kern County, you get a human being that calls you and comes and evaluates you. Nobody does that here in LA. They say, sorry, or you get a robot that doesn't even know you're blind. Thank you. I hope you got my question. Where do we go?
So I'll start. Robert, that's my hometown. I'm a Los Angeles native as well. So okay. I feel you. So depending on your jurisdiction, I would go to your city.
I live in Chatsworth.
So city of Los Angeles, that's my hometown. the Office of Emergency Management actually does have a DAFN coordinator. So I could email Jeff the website, but you can sign up for Ready LA. That's their alert and warning system, first and foremost. And I can't speak on the behalf of everything that they are doing now because I've left EMD for approximately 4 years, but they do have a group and a committee that does work together to make sure that there is strategies in place, including a transportation mutual aid agreement that includes paratransit. So they use 311 for information. Mm-hmm. But I could send to this group the link to get you the up-to-date information. So I don't want to speak on behalf of them tremendously. But first and foremost, please register for Ready LA. I'm sorry, Notify LA, and then LA County has their alert and warning system also. And there, and City of Los Angeles Emergency Management Department is pretty active, and they do have a community preparedness and engagement program that does go out. So I would like to, if Jeff, if we can, provide that link, and so you can share it with the team.
Thank you. 10 years ago, one of our past presidents, who I would imagine is perhaps on this call, Donna Pomerantz, was very active in LA County's emergency preparedness team. And if we don't have anybody on their Access and Functional Needs Advisory Council, you guys in LA County better get on the ball.
Yeah. We can take one email if it came in, and then we're going to have to, for the sake of time, move on.
We have no email questions right now.
Okay. And that was only one
hand. Do you have a hand?
You have another hand in Zoom. Do you want that?
Yes. Do you have time for that, Regina?
Quickly, dear, whoever it is.
It is Frank Welty, and you can go ahead and unmute.
Well, I really enjoyed this panel. You know, every emergency is an opportunity for lessons to be learned. So I'm going to ask the panelists very quickly, what do you think was the big lesson about people with AFN, access and functional needs, that we learned from this year's LA fires?
I think that was a tough one to pin down. We learned a lot. We really need to do a thorough job of pulling back all those layers. I think just at the outset, you know, we've made so much progress on this issue in California that sometimes you hear people talk as though, you know, we're there, right? And I'm always really quick to say we're not, right? We've not yet arrived. And I think this was a very stark reminder. There continues to be a disproportionate impact on people with access and functional needs every time there's a disaster. And this was no different. And so if we're looking at alerting and getting accessible messages to people, we need to do better. If we're talking about how do we make sure people can evacuate safely, we need to do better. How do we make sure that shelters have all the resources that they need to serve everybody? We need to do better. And now as we look at recovery and things like affordable, accessible housing, we need to do better. So this is one we're going to really have to unpack. We will learn from it. We will continue to improve. And it's going to take a whole of community effort to get there.
Thank you, Vance. And we have a hard stop at 4 o'clock. So I really appreciate you, Georgiana, Jennifer, and see, I'm not looking at my program. Jackie, you come and spend some time with us and answer our questions and empower us. I want to thank you for the encouragement that you've given us on advocacy. All right. We have some business to take care of, and then we have some door prizes and a couple of more of those chapter of the year submissions, but an important announcement. And please, if you're going to leave, at least stay for a second. We are starting at 7 p.m. and going straight to our elections tonight. So we are starting at 7 p.m. and we will be moving right into our elections tonight. So spread the word. I'm sure there'll be emails and so forth, but sometimes our grapevine works a little better than email. So go ahead and spread that word that it's 7 o'clock tonight and not 6. So that's very important. But let's, Lisa has been patiently waiting. We're going to have a door prize and hear two of our chapter of the year submissions and another door prize. So stick around, Lisa. Take it away. Lisa.
One second. Just a moment. Sorry. I just saw her hand go up. Just a second.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Lisa, you should be able to unmute.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
thank you. Great presentations and congratulations to this afternoon's award winners. Very well deserved. So let's give away some money here, and I'm hoping that the volume is going to be good for everybody. I took your advice, Larry, and switched up my settings. So let's see how this works. So first off is we're going to do a $25 gift card to Target from the Bayview chapter. So let's get this wheel shuffled really good. And let's give it a spin.
No. Da 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 da. We don't hear the music.
We hear you, but we don't hear the wheel, Lisa.
So you didn't hear the music at all?
No.
No.
Huh.
It's okay. Let's give it out anyway.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's because we're in a webinar, but we'll try to make some adjustments. So the winner is Patricia Nash. Oh, congratulations, Patty.
Yay. We'll get that to you. Okay. Let's go on to our chapter of the year because I know we're going close. We'll play 2 and 3 if you're there, John.
Okay. You want to just back to back, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here's number 2.
Hi, this is Penny Valdivinos, the president of CCCLV, California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. We have worked hard in doing a new constitution, getting it updated and granted since Bernice has passed. We have a Sunday chat on the 2nd and 4th Sundays of the month. We also have membership meetings monthly. We like to hear from everyone, and we want everyone to know that anyone that is totally blind now that has proceeded from being low vision is welcome. Even totally blind people are welcome. We value all their input in all our meetings. And we meet on the first Monday of the month at 6 o'clock.
Good evening, and what a lovely day this is. My name is Andre Green. I am the president of the Glendale Burbank chapter. There's some exciting things we're going to be putting in place moving forward. And I'm just hoping that I get your support, love, and understanding as we move forward in the 2025 calendar year. You know, some of the things we've initiated was we have this You Can Give, where we're reaching out to other blind individuals who have broken canes, unwanted canes, unused canes, and even new canes that we can give out to those outside of our country who can't afford or can use and are in need of Kane. So it's a You Can Give. A friend of mine has, he's also blind out of Tennessee, who has an opportunity to take canes to other countries for those that are blind and are in need of cane. We mail all those canes out to him. He fixes them and repairs them with his other team. And we're allowed to give back what was so freely given to us because those canes in other countries are extremely expensive. So that's one of the things we've done. We're trying to incorporate other new members so that we can get more active in our community. It's important that we continue to give back to what was freely given to us. That's this new way of life. And other things we've done is trying to do socials where we can get out more. Although the pandemic did slow us all down, but yet we are fighters. We're go-getters. So we're encouraging others to come and join us and some of the social events we have near and far. We had an amazing Christmas party last year in December, and it was so exciting, and we had so much fun. Everyone left with a gift, just to name a few things we gave away. We also had meal giveaways where some people won raffles where they didn't even have to pay for their meal. So that was exciting. Everyone enjoyed themselves. And so that's why I'm just elated that I'm the president, and I'm looking forward to meeting all of you in this 2025 calendar year.
Thank you. Excellente. Okay, we got that wheel ready again, Lisa.
1 second. Sorry.
She's got to do one more door prize.
Okay, Lisa, go ahead.
Or two if you have them.
I have one. I have two. It's your call. How many we're doing, Regina?
We have time for two.
Okay. So we're going to do $25 gift card to Starbucks from GSGDHI.
Okay.
Okay, so let me see. I switched it up. Let's see if we can hear it here. I'm not sure.
No, we'll figure it out by next time.
No. Oh, no. Okay, I think I'm going to have to work off two computers tonight. The winner is Catherine Fancher. Congratulations, Catherine.
Congratulations. And one more very quickly. Let's go.
And one more. Okay. So $25 gift card to, hold on, my list just went away. $25 gift card to Amazon. From the Fresno chapter.
Okay. Here we go. That wheel spinning.
And the winner is Vita Zavalli.
Vita Zavalli. Yay. Maybe you can tell her, Frank, if she's not on the call. All right. Don't forget 7 o'clock tonight. 7 o'clock, guys. So spread the word. Thank you for being wonderful participants. This was a great group of panelists and presentations. And thank you, Natalie, for hosting. Thank you, John, for playing the files. And were you streaming too, John?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Still thank am. You.
I really appreciate it. We appreciate you. And come back. There's lots more of our wonderful CCB convention 2025.